Welcome to the Mumbrella Podcast, brought to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. This week, we chat to News Limited sales director Tony Kendall about their national supplement strategy. We talk about how Australia apparently leads the world in social media. We ask, is the advertising industry suffering from a lack of women creatives? Joining me as usual, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hello.
Scott Rody of PR agency House Party, welcome
Hi.
Along. So first to News Limited. Now, for the first time, certainly on a weekday, it doesn't matter whether you're in Sydney, Melbourne or Adelaide, you'll be reading the same recipe and the same TV review and the same music recommendation. Taste is the supplement that comes out on Tuesdays. Teleguide Switched On is Wednesdays. And Entertainment Supplement Hit is being inserted in News Limited papers on Thursdays. Totally a great way of saving money, I should think.
Certainly not why we're doing it. Certainly the reason we're launching these sections is to get the best editorial that our country can muster into these sections. And I have to correct you a little bit. The editorial is not going to be the same in every market. So whilst the brands are the same nationally, and when we break a big story nationally and those things, it'll appear nationally, but they're very much local sections, so there'll still be restaurant reviews in Melbourne about Melbourne restaurants, obviously, and certainly if there's food trends that are different in Queensland, then the food trends in Queensland will be represented differently. So there's lots of different editors still working on very localised sections, but under a common brand.
And clearly for things like the TV Guide, the same would apply
so,
as well.
You know, state-based shows will get covered differently. The whole notion of it, though, was, you know, we had lots of different sections in different papers around the country on different days of the week, pretty hard for advertisers to buy, and, you know, we weren't leveraging the quality of our editorial that we could to the highest extent, and also to really hard to do national promotions when you had six different promotion managers, six different sections appearing around the country on six different days, potentially, so it makes it a lot easier for advertisers to buy us, and the audiences they reach are going to be really appreciative of the new sections, which the first one was today.
And I suppose with things like the travel section, for instance, suddenly you've got one travel editor, talking about the editorial side, who's incredibly powerful and influential because they're commanding a national audience.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously that travel editor can then go out and employ the best travel writers in the country to work for the best travel section in the country read by the most people.
Now, I remember that some of the sort of speculation when sort of things first started moving in this direction was, OK, this is all just going to, you know, totally centred on Sydney and everyone else is going to be an outpost.
Well, far from us. Escape section's based out of Brisbane. Your Money section on Monday is based out of Adelaide. Hit and Switched On are based out of Melbourne. And Taste is getting produced out of Sydney. So the centres of excellence in each market that are producing each of the sections.
So will we at some point see a sort of, you know, even closer sort of working together of the mastheads? At some point will we have the Daily, Telegraph, Courier, Post, Herald Sun or something?
No. I mean, I think, you know, what makes each of the newspapers unique to the markets of the news and, you know, the general news in sport will always be very local and very rightly so. But when there's opportunities to have a national section and to, you know, the movie launches of Avatar are going to be the same day around the country, why would you bother reviewing it five times? You know, you review it once with the best reviewer in the country and, you know, and give advertisers the opportunity to access that audience once.
And how is the market going?
Yeah, good. We had a really strong last 3 months of last year and January's come out okay, and February looks good, and March looks okay. So there's definitely a returning confidence to the market, despite the interest rate rise, which have slowed the retailers a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose this is the moment where we get to find out how much of the issues for newspapers are structural and how much are just the cycle once the cycle comes back.
Absolutely. And I think you'll find that, you know, there will be a slow return to recruitment advertising. It's probably the one that's probably the lag the most, but there's not a lot of job advertising going on at all, as the ANZ job figures showed the other day. So if you look at the last 3 or 4 months of last year, you know, it showed that newspapers are still very, very strong, particularly with the retailers, so the supermarkets and department stores spent a lot of their money in newspapers last year because they knew it worked.
Would it be fair to say then that this is a sales-driven initiative, the changes to attract those national advertisers? Is this from your end?
For the first time at News, it's probably absolutely both. You know, certainly there's a commercial imperative to it, but equally there's an editorial imperative to have, you know, the best quality sections, given that, you know, these are very, very interesting sections for people to read. And, you know, the brand new one, which launched today, Taste, is a completely new section for our newspapers, and it, you know, recognises the fact that, you know, we don't put enough into our papers for women sometimes.
Yeah.
And it comes off the back of the taste.com.au website, which is, you know, now Australia's number one lifestyle website. So,
well, I was going to make that point. This is a real crossover between print and online.
Absolutely. It's a, you know, it's a complete package that says, you know, there's different ways people use the different media, and certainly online's great for search of recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And this section and other magazines that we launch, you know, or have are there sort of for that inspiration, or even food porn, if you like. And then they can access the actual recipes really easily online. But, you know, They complement each other.
I'm slightly haunted by the image on the front, which obviously is a dreadful thing to do for an audio podcast. But yeah, Matt Preston with a large fork, and just about getting that giant tomato into his mouth as well.
Yeah,
he's looking forward to getting another red stain on that white suit.
It's about 16 pages, this insert, and we noticed we're having a look through. You've got 2 full page ads, a couple of quarter page.
That's a strip. Very generous ratio to the editorial guys there.
Did you hit your targets? Your first advertising targets, sir.
You hit the first targets.
Yeah,
we budgeted to start off slower, obviously, mm-hmm. given that, you know, FMCG planning cycles are quite long. So
talk us through who the main advertisers are, Camille.
So the back page is Harvey Norman.
Yep.
And the inside back is Redwin Sensitive Skin. Then we have a couple of smaller ones, the strip ads. We've got one for Jordan's Restaurant, which we're very familiar with, Tim.
Yes, we had a very disastrous office Christmas party at Jordan's Restaurant. The only time I've ever had a member of staff use the phrase, "Sir, you need to calm down."
To you or?
To me, yes.
Oh, wow.
With me saying, "I am calm."
Suffice to say, they're a wonderful client.
Correct food and service, yeah.
Oh, look, you know, there's FMCG. We've been out in the market the last 5 or 6 weeks with the sections, with FMCG advertisers, and they're all very, very supportive of it. They love the new look. They love the fact that they can easily buy it, you know, with a common audience around the country. So we're expecting good things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess there's still a gap for Fridays.
Yep. Well, it was just a... Certainly there's some planning going on for a Friday section as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fridays, it's harder to actually, from a production point of view, to put a new section in our papers because the papers are so full with Cars Guide and form guides and sport and those sorts of things. They're very busy papers on Friday. If we can production-wise fit it in, there's definitely plans for one more section.
I suppose that's the issue, and presumably weekends are now as stuffed as they can possibly be.
They're as value-packed as they can possibly be, Tim, yes. Look, you know, it is, we've got production capacity that matches, you know, pretty much fills out on a Saturday and Sunday, and Friday's a little similar to that as well.
Mm.
So you're not going to need a lot of new product, but certainly you'll get some different product in those potentially in terms of we work out what works better and what works worse, etc.
Where's the next sort of opportunity for development, do you think, then?
I think we'll still be, it'll be around it's in a lifestyle area, and certainly probably still targeting females.
Mm. Now, in a sort of you've been with News for, you know, probably 2 decades now or so, and you had a stint with magazines as well. Where do you see the magazine market as being at the moment?
Yeah, the magazines had a really tough year last year. They're probably the worst of all the media, given particularly some of our luxury brands have lots of international exposure, and the international companies, you know, did it very, very tough and made, you know, global business cut decisions. I think Australia's also always been a market that's had a lot of magazines, and if you look prior to GFC, we actually launched a lot more. So I think there'll probably be some consolidation of magazine titles, but, you know, the strong ones will still be strong, and there's still, as I said, you know, people love the porn and the inspiration that mags provide. They love the... You know,
they love the porn. Sorry, are you planning on launching a porn magazine?
I think it's probably worth adding that to the context of food porn.
Of course.
Yeah. Fashion porn. I mean, you know, there's that inspiration that people get out of... I'm going to get in all sorts of trouble now. There's the inspiration...
It's how cruelly we edit you.
Yeah,
later,
that people get from magazines.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that'll always be there. You don't get that sort of same experience from a website. gossip's probably the hardest one, because I think, you know, the people that do go to the magazines for gossip can get that online, but when it comes to fashion and food and home and, you know, people building a house, you know, they want the pictures and they want to, you know, make their own, you know, cut and paste books and those sorts of things. You know, I see that there's a strong place for all those.
I suppose the crunch question is when, presumably at some point, the launch of Glamour comes back on the timetable again, which was, you know, I said before, probably the smartest publishing decision of the last 2 years was not launching Glamour. But presumably that comes back on the timetable at some point.
At some point, absolutely. I mean, you know, all the reasons we wanted to launch it in the first place are still there, because it's a great magazine brand, it's international, you know, it fits a new lifestyle in terms of its, you know, handbag size is a new thing for, you know, it's proved exceptionally popular all the world over. And you're right, you know, we got a fair bit of flack for not launching it, but, you know, in hindsight, it was the best decision we ever made.
Now, you spent some time in the US as well. What's now that News has acquired, for instance, the Wall Street Journal, does that change the atmosphere of the company here as well? Is it more kind of US-looking, do you think, or...?
Oh, no, it's always been very US-looking anyway, from the point of view of, you know, the big profits that come out of the film and TV divisions over there. From a newspaper point of view, though, I think having the Wall Street Journal has helped the Australian immensely, you know, putting a lot of that extra pagination into business and giving it a lot more of that sort of, particularly given the events that have happened over the last 12 months, you know, it's all been US-focused, it's all been finance and banking-focused, and having that Wall Street Journal coverage has made a huge difference to the Australian, I think.
There is a Wall Street Journal Asia, of course. Should there be a Wall Street Journal Australia, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you put enough coverage into the Australian, I think you get that covered. And I think, you know, there's always the web for, you know, if you want to sort which, you know, which parts of the Wall Street Journal news internationally you want to get. So I think we're well enough served by the Australian and the Fin Review.
I talked to someone in a media agency the other day who said he couldn't wait until the Australian and the SMH and the Age all go tabloid, just because he thinks it's what readers do want. What do your advertisers tell you?
The advertisers, I think, that are in the broadsheets. You know, they like the broadsheets from a creative point of view for big impact stuff. There's no question there's reader research that says a smaller newspapers for commuters and the like is more palatable. But, you know, the Australian, which is our only broadsheet, doesn't have a big commuter market anyway, and we've found that, you know, in all the research we've done with advertisers, they're pretty happy with the broadsheet format for the Australian. I can't speak on behalf of the Age or the Sydney Morning Herald, but there's no question that, you know, globally newspapers have looked at sort of changing their size, but, you know, we're not in that space.
I guess within the News family, a really good example though would be the Times in the UK, which very successfully did go tabloid.
Yeah, and, you know, but again, massive commuter market, and there was two or three other competitors that went down the same path as well too. So, you know, I don't see the need for that here in Australia as much, and certainly I don't think advertisers or readers are screaming out for it as much as they have overseas.
Well, we sort of dropped a couple of hints just going back to the supplements, that there could be one more in the offing. When might we hear about that, do you think?
It'll be a few months, but we've got a lot to bed down these three, plus the two we launched last year. You know, a lot of work in bedding those down and getting those running right, and we'll get that right first and then move on from there.
Well, Tony, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tony.
Now, new stats suggest that Australians are the world's largest users of social media. Scott, what do you reckon? 7 hours a month? Does that sound about right to you?
That sounds about right, I think.
I think you're using a few people's allocation, though, aren't you?
Well, yeah, probably using about 9 people's allocations at times.
But that's how everyone else can go outside in the sunshine.
Yeah, that's what the country's for. But no, I think the younger generation are using it a lot more. I mean, they're spending a lot of time on Facebook, and, you know, as a per head of population thing, that's going to make an impact on the older people. But, you know, I saw some stats recently that said that, you know, your baby boomers and all that are really kicking into Facebook at the moment. You know, they're getting involved in Twitter. So you've got everybody in this country kind of getting involved in social media. And obviously the stats show that, you know, it's 6 hours, 52 minutes, I think.
Yes, it's worth just talking through these numbers, which have come from Nielsen. So it's part of a sort of global piece of research.
Yeah. So Australia, the average time spent on social media each month in Australia is 6 hours, 52 minutes.
Number one in the world.
Yes. United States is only 6 hours and 9 minutes. United Kingdom, 6 hours and 7 minutes. Then it kind of goes Italy, Spain, Brazil, and they're all, you know, 6 hours, 5 hours, 4 hours, all the way down to Japan, who's only 2 hours 50, which is strange. I thought Japan would have, you know, been a lot more involved in it. But then they use their phones a lot for communication, so it might be a different type of social media they would class it as over there.
I suppose the other question, obviously, that always comes up is, can you directly compare methodologies, even when it's Nielsen doing it in all of these different countries? You have all of these issues about double counting, whether they're really unique.
Yeah, are they using it at home? Are they using it at work? But let's be honest here, stats are stats when it boils down to it. You know, there's a million of them out there, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But
this one puts Australia at number one, so it's a good story.
One. Yeah, hey.
Is it why is Australia number one, and why is it a good thing?
I think it's great because it goes to show that people are getting more involved in social media.
Why Australia? What's your theory?
Well, it's strange because you would think that Australia being, you know, such a lovely country and people have spent a lot of time outdoors, that they would use it less. But I think people are just realising it's the best form, one of the best ways to communicate with other people. And they're using it a lot for research, I think, and to brands. They're using it for engaging with their friends. They're using it to see what stories are out there. And I think that it's important, I think, because it's where the future's lying. You know, a lot of brands realise that they need to be in this space just so that they can get involved.
Well, let me ask you this, Kumar. You're the Australian in the room. What is it about Australians that makes them the sociable ones who participate in a big way?
Well, I suppose some people have said that it's just the general attitude of Australians that's very kind of community or very friendly.
Kind of mateship.
The mateship issue, I suppose. But I suppose for me as well, it's... One, you know, you don't often say this in this day and age. The tyranny of distance still does exist in that, for example, when I was overseas for a couple of years, I was hitting up Facebook so much to keep in touch with my friends and family, and then more so than Twitter. Since I've come back, probably less so, more just friends. But, I mean, that could be a factor, just the geography.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps. If I log into Facebook, you know, if I look at the chat section, there's usually at least 30 to 40 people out of my friends always online, you know, throughout the day, and it just goes to show you that, and these people aren't, you know, social media people, they aren't involved in PR and all that kind of stuff. These are just, you know, everybody's got different jobs and all that kind of stuff, but they're all logged on constantly in a kind of rotation. You know, you log on any time, there's MD there to chat with.
And yet very few brands, for instance, or certainly agencies, are really coming up with brilliant social media campaigns.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a big dearth of kind of interesting stuff happening over here. A lot of it's copied from across the world, where people are, you know, saying, oh, that worked there, we'll use it over here, which is a shame, because it'd be nice to see some new creatives coming out and seeing what people can actually do.
We're still waiting for that big case study, aren't we? I mean, I know that in terms of a global scale, in terms of a big brand, Pepsi, with a refresh project, looking to, you know, they've moved away from the Super Bowl ads to the 20 million social media campaigns. So I think everyone's watching to see how that'll work out, and if Pepsi will take it up here in Australia as well.
I think there's a... Look, I think over the next 2 years, you're going to see some pretty impressive campaigns coming out. It's just obviously getting... I think part of it is getting a lot of the market managers to realise that this is where part of the budget needs to go. It's similar to PR. You know, you've got your advertising budget, you've got your PR budget, and you've got your social media budget. I mean, theoretically, social media is still part of... It's just another channel, but you should be taking 10% and funneling it there, 10% in your PR, as this kind of standard goes. You know, and, you know, pull back on your advertising because it's not doing as well as it used to.
Well, speaking of advertising, last week we had our regular Mumbrella question time. We do about once a month or so. It's kind of a bit like this podcast, except with an audience and a cleverer panel.
Thanks.
Now, one of the topics that came up was women in advertising. Now, Camille, you were there. Let's start with Robert Morgan from the Clemenger Group had to say about the lack of women in creativity.
Well, he was just speaking about how there's a lack of women in creativity, and he doesn't really know why. Because a lot of the agencies, and his agency being an example, or his group being an example, is there about 65% of it is made up of women.
But the interesting phrase he uses, but once it gets towards the pointy end of the ship. Being very careful to pronounce it, ship.
Ship, as opposed to the other.
There was a misunderstanding at
word,
the...
as I was transcribing and had to listen back several times after the seminar. There's a bit of an issue in terms of women. Well, there's two issues. One is lack of women in creativity, and two, in management leadership roles. And across the panel, I think we saw a bit of a trend, well, across the four panelists, one from client side, which was David May from Jetstar, head of marketing. And he put forward, and he's ex-agency as well, he put forward the argument that it seems to be more endemic within agency land as opposed to client side, because he's met a lot of marketers and CEOs, women in power from client side, whereas in agency side, he couldn't recall the last female in a management role, MD role.
Well, his argument was that women were smart enough to leave and move client side.
I would agree with that argument, but I don't know if that's actually the case.
The funny thing is, in public relations, it's the opposite. It's mostly females in public relations.
Yes, I was going to say, you're one of the few men that I've met from PR, and certainly one of the few straight men I've met from PR.
I know. Well, it's very strange. Hey, I'm straight. Back off.
Okay.
But I guess one of the other points is, what is it about the creative departments within ad agencies? Because that seems to be the area that's most hostile to women working there.
There was one actual poster, and who's written a guest posting for us, who's in creative, who's freelancing at the moment. She put forward the theory that perhaps men are just have this, you almost have to have this pathological belief in yourself as a creative and have incredibly thick skin, which perhaps men are better at than women. Perhaps men are just better at being more egotistical.
I suppose that is one of the things about creatives, isn't it? It's much like, I always think it's a little bit like being a consultant, a doctor, where you have to have this amazing self-belief to get to the top, and you have to run a team, and you have to not be knocked off course. And it's a very, very fine line between that self-belief and deluded arrogance. And, you know, it's very easy to be sort of taken the wrong side of it. And you know, maybe it's something to do with that, perhaps.
I really don't know if that's just something to do with something within agency land. I mean, that really, for me, sounds as though something that can be in any industry, really.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, public relations, there's a lot of creativity involved, but, you know, it doesn't seem to have the same stigma attached to it. You know, the ad world seems to be this male-dominated world a lot of the time, which is, you know, strange, because men and women can be as equal as creative as each other.
Well, that is where we will have to leave it today. My thanks to Camille.
Thank you.
And to Scott Rohde from House Party.
Thanks, Tim.
Also to CBS Interactive for providing the studio facilities. Your producer was Georgina Pearson. I'm Tim Burrows, and that was the Mumbrella Podcast. See you next week.